This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. We're about to hear some of the songs of country music's first superstar. Jimmie Rodgers was a musical innovator and a storyteller. Paul Brown traces Rodgers' success as we continue our series on honky-tonks, hymns, and the blues.
He was a multi-million-selling pop star years before Hank Williams, Elvis Presley, or Garth Brooks. He owned a mansion and liked to wear sharp suits, but the enduring image of Jimmie Rodgers is that of a working-class man sporting the striped hat and blue denim that earned him the nickname the Singing Brakeman.
I'll tell you a story of Jimmie the Kid. He's a brakeman, you all know. He was born in Mississippi, away down south, and he flagged on the TNNO.
The son of a railroad worker, James Charles Rodgers learned to walk and talk like a brakeman, but he wanted to be an entertainer.
He yodeled to fame on the Boston Main, the Wabash and the TP. From the old Grand Trunk to the Cotton Belt, he yodeled on the Santa Fe.
Seven rail lines intersected in his hometown of Meridian, Mississippi, and those trains brought in actors, singers, and phonograph records from across the country. The young musician absorbed these influences and gradually developed a performing style that was hard to classify, says Rodgers biographer Nolan Porterfield.
One of the mistakes, I think, is in thinking of Jimmie Rodgers as a hillbilly or as even the father of country music. You have to realize those terms just didn't exist.
Porterfield says Rodgers liked a wide variety of music. His wife, Carrie, wrote in her memoir that Jimmie bought records, quote, by the ton. It's likely that there were many jazz and blues recordings in his collection, but he was also fond of the top pop crooners of the day, like Gene Austin.
When Whippoorwill calls, and evening is nigh, I hurry to my blue heaven.
Jimmie Rodgers and Gene Austin could not have been more different, says country music historian Charles Wolfe.
And when Rodgers hit that market, this was nothing like the well-mannered, middle-class, record-buying American public had ever heard. This was not their father's music.
T for Texas, T for Tennessee. T for Texas, T for Tennessee. That gal that made a wreck out of me.
Jimmie Rodgers' first bona fide hit consisted of a series of lines lifted from traditional blues songs, each stanza punctuated by a striking vocal trademark.
Ole, ole, hey, hey.
For lack of a better name, producer Ralph Peer dubbed the tune Blue Yodel. Peer considered it a novelty song, but much to his surprise, it sold hundreds of thousands of 78s and led to the recording of 12 more blue yodels.
If you ever had the blues, you know just how I feel. I'm about to lose my loving gal, Lucy.
To this day, scholars still aren't sure how Rodgers came up with his yodel. Some point to the field hollers of black farm workers or the singing of blues musicians he might have heard. Others say he could have picked it up from traveling vaudeville shows. Either way, Nolan Porterfield says once Rodgers etched his falsetto warble into wax, the yodel was everywhere.
Eddie Arnold told this great story about the old fellow he encountered somewhere down in Tennessee, and he said, "That damn Jimmie Rodgers, he taught every country boy to yodel."
By the end of 1928, Rodgers was earning $2,000 a month in record royalties. And his fortunes continued to soar, even as America sank into the Great Depression, when buying a record often meant spending a day's wage for the average worker.
I'm going to California, where they sleep out every night.
Blue Yodel No. 4, also known as California Blues, was a theme song for many who fled the Dust Bowl of Oklahoma for the promise of California in the 1930s. Merle Haggard's family was part of that migration, and he says Jimmie Rodgers continues to be a hero to him and to many other contemporary musicians.
He resonated with people, I think, because he did something extremely hard, extremely good. He had a short career, 6 years, something like that, and recorded something like 110 or 12 songs direct to disc. It was just him right straight into a mic. And I don't think anybody's ever beat that yet.
He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him over again to quit drinking whiskey, lay off of that gin. He's in the jailhouse now.
Record sales paid for a spacious house Rogers dubbed the Blue Yodeler's Paradise in Kerrville, Texas. But he barely had time to enjoy it. He was touring and recording all the time. In 1929 alone, he was on the road for nearly 8 months. In August of 1932, he arrived at the Victor Studios in New York with a new batch of songs. His guitarist was a 24-year-old Atlanta native named Hoyt Slim Bryant. In a recent interview with NPR member station WCPN in Cleveland, Bryant recalled that Jimmy Rogers' performing style sometimes confounded the big city studio musicians.
The thing about Jimmy was that if he wanted to stick in an extra two beats or a half a bar, he would do it. If you weren't good enough to pay attention to what he was doing and could anticipate that, you couldn't play with Jimmy. Of course, the country music people would catch that right away. But the guys in New York, they wouldn't know what the heck is going on.
But Slim got it.
Pick that thing, boy.
Something else was evident at that session. Rogers had to pause between takes to catch his breath. His lungs were slowly being eaten up by tuberculosis. But even though Rogers must have known he was going to die, Slim Bryant says the singer wasn't one to talk about it.
Never mentioned his condition, how he was, or he hoped to get better, or anything like that. It was all business and then laughing and talking and joking and whatever.
At the time, TB was a leading cause of death in the United States, and a year before his last recording session, it gave Jimmy Rogers another story to share with his listeners.
Don't let the TB ever get you down. Don't let it get you down. First they want your insurance, then they want to plant you in the ground. The odor, the play that thing, boy. Pick it, pick it.
Jimmy Rogers died on May 26th, 1933, less than 6 years after his first hit. For all of the singer's fame, selling millions of records, playing to large sell-out crowds across the South, biographer Nolan Porterfield says Rogers was just as happy pulling his Cadillac into a small town.
Well, he played O'Donnell, Texas, where I grew up, where I went to high school. There was a population then, and max would have been 1,500, 2,000 people. He just loved to perform.
And the fans loved Jimmy Rogers and the way he seemed to tell their stories in song. And they loved how, at the end of the show, the singing brakeman flipped over his guitar to reveal a sign that said, "Thanks." For NPR News, I'm Paul Brown.
You can hear more views about Jimmy Rogers from Merle Haggard by going to our website at npr.org. Next week, the Maddox Brothers and Rose.
And my heart is full of pain. I'm 1,000 miles away from home, just waiting for a train.